All right, so here we go again, folks. It's the 4th of July. To be honest, your favorite patriotic song is what? To be honest, my favorite patriotic song is one I'm going to talk about in just a second. Before I get there, though, we'll get into that, I promise, in just a minute. Again, happy 4th of July from all of us here on America Tonight. That means me, Kate Delaney, Matt the Glue Johnson, and Nathan, missing in action reader. Don't worry, he's coming back. Remember, he talked about his freaky tree accident with the apartment, the slip, and all that kind of stuff. And it actually led to an interesting segment, Dumb Things I Shouldn't Have Done. And I'm right there with you, Nathan. Boy, I have a couple of them. I think I talked about them on the air. The time I was hiking in New Mexico and thought, oh, this can't be that hard. Just follow the signs. And you know what happens when you go into the woods, especially in a national forest, and you think you know where you're going? I didn't have to have anyone come in and rescue me, but let's just say it was pretty scary stuff. So fun facts about fireworks in the U.S., because I'm a fireworks freak. I don't go out and buy them, but going to the show and seeing different shows, that's always pretty big for me. And of course, the 4th of July, that's when really you see it the most. There are other times, but in my life, really, it's been the 4th of July, maybe Labor Day in some cases. I can remember as a kid being down the shore in New Jersey at Wildwood Crest or Ocean City, and then you'd see fireworks at the end of the year there. So anyway, in America, the earliest settlers brought fireworks to the United States. And where do you think they found out about fireworks? From the Chinese, because the Chinese still really have the bar high when it comes to manufacturing them. I mean, they're not the only ones who manufacture them, but primarily a lot of it still comes from China. They're the ones who are credited with the origin of fireworks and inventing fireworks. So fireworks and black ash are used to celebrate events, like thinking about, you know, even before the American Revolutionary War, the first celebration, of course, of Independence Day was in 1777, 6 years before Americans knew whether the new nation would survive the war, which is so crazy to think about that in your head, that they, you know, the doubt that who knows what's going to happen. Fireworks were always, always part of the deal. If you read anything, any historical reference, you'll read something about fireworks. In fact, in 1789, George Washington's inauguration had an amazing fireworks display. So there was always that fascination with the color, the noise. I mean, you know, we've had it way back when. On New Year's Eve, there are fireworks shows, too. The arrival of the new year, the stroke of midnight, the famous ball drops in New York City's Times Square. So the same thing. In 1999, I might have told this story. I looked this up one time. Walt Disney World in Lake Buena Vista, Florida, actually came up with the commercial use of aerial fireworks launched with compressed air rather than gunpowder. So think about that. We're 1999. I had no idea. They use the air instead of the gunpowder for Epcot. They do a huge nighttime show, so they have the spectacular, and that's what they used it for. The display shells explode in the air, and they use an electric timer. Sometimes if you go to a show, you'll see that they're setting that up. The advantages of the compressed air launch, they say, are reduce fumes that you see, so you won't smell the fumes and see those fumes, and also the height and timing. So they have better accuracy in launching them much higher, which I'm a big fan of that because I'm all about shoot them up higher, higher in the air. Please, please do that. So the Walt Disney Company is actually still today the largest consumer, believe it or not, of fireworks in the United States. I don't know that I would have guessed that. And the, you know, I'm giving you little hints on some facts here that make future great trivia questions. There's one for you. Who's the largest consumer of fireworks in the United States? It's the Walt Disney Company. Frame it like that, right? The largest pyrotechnic display in our country is called Thunder Over Louisville, which kicks off the Kentucky Derby Festival, because the Kentucky Derby is so big. That makes sense to me. Bigger, badder, better. How are we going to do this thing? And they go for broke. I've actually never seen the kickoff. I've never seen that. But I heard it is well worth it. If you ever make it down to the Kentucky Derby, if you have a chance to spread out the the days, and you can be there a little bit longer. They say it's so worth it to go and actually see this. So at the top of the show, I kind of asked, you know, be honest, what's your favorite patriotic song? I said I would tell you what mine is. And I think of all the songs that I can remember, because really as a kid, isn't it when you're young, you start to learn them, or we used to anyway, who knows now, but it used to be that you would learn a lot of the songs when you were a kid. But the one that, I mean, it's an obvious one, but the one that always, always stuck with me is the Star Spangled Banner. And it may be just that it's a matter of how many times I've actually heard the Star Spangled Banner. And the answer is, I really was trying to nail it. I was trying to think, you know, I have to figure out how many times this is, because I think people would be interested to know, because I bet you I have you all beat on the Star Spangled Banner, unless you're working at some venue like a major league ballpark where you're year after year after year hearing the Star Spangled Banner. And that's my reason why, because I covered sports for so long. Besides the events that I went to as a kid and other events that had the Star Spangled Banner, I think I'm close to, I went back and looked at some press passes, trying to, in my mind, multiply the days. I think I'm close to 550 times of seeing, you know, of hearing the Star Spangled Banner sung at some venue, mostly sports, but other things too as well. And you would think, you think I know all the words to the Star Spangled Banner? Of course I do. And it started when we were kids. Although singing it, my singing voice, I would say I'm not in danger of replacing Beyonce or anyone else who grabs the mic and can really nail the song, because I think it's one of the toughest ones to, very tough to hit the high notes, no question about it. But it goes on my list. Another one from being really young in kindergarten, the first patriotic song that I ever heard, and some of you might have remember this one too, might have heard this too when you were a kid, This Land Is Your Land. Remember that? And there's a great version of it by Pete Seeger and Bruce Springsteen. They did one. And so it's not like the old timey when you were a kid, you heard it. And I just loved that song when I was little. It still does not hold up against the Star Spangled Banner, but I'd say it's up there as one of my favorite ones. And just because it's a throwback money, I guess, for me. Somebody asked me if I thought the Warren Zevon song Lawyers, Guns, and Money was patriotic. I like the song, but it depends on your definition of patriotic. It is a very good song, but I don't know that I would put it down as patriotic. One that somebody sent me one time, I'll never forget this, when I was doing a show, is a song by Roseanne Cash, and it's called 500 Miles. And I think I would put that on a list of patriotic music. And the lyrics are, the lyrics are just absolutely killer in her song. She was a pretty good songwriter, and she belted those lyrics out pretty good. All right, so coming up, a poignant conversation with Robert Siciliano the day of the Boston Marathon. He ran the marathon. He couldn't finish, but his concern was for his family, his young children, and his wife, and also his mother-in-law and whatnot, after the two explosions rocked the finish line, killing three people and wounding 264. Plus, John McDougall, and Ed Mosier stopped by as well. All that next on America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources. July 1st, 2013. Gold open this morning at $1239.50. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1272.45, $636.23 for a half ounce, or $318.11 for a quarter ounce. That's $1272.45, $636.23, and $318.11.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver is going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explained this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for your free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters, for the love of clean water.
We've been talking about what's happened in Boston. I had several friends running the race, and it's just mind-boggling sad. It reminds me so much of, sadly, what happened when I was in New York City, 9/11. And now we've got another person killed. There's two people so far, including an 8-year-old. Unbelievable. There are no words. 141 people injured in Boston in what looks to be a terror attack. What variety, we don't know now at this point. Our pal Robert Siciliano, no better. He is just a great guy, personal security and identity theft expert. We've had him on the show so many times. And he does a great charity thing, Miles for Miracles, for the Boston Marathon every time he runs it. And people love to donate to that and really love Robert. Robert, we're very happy that you're okay, but what a terrible thing to witness. Where were you? Explain what happened and what you heard while you were running.
I was actually rounding the corner to Boylston Street. I had done about a 4-hour marathon. I was on my way to the finish line. It was in my sights. I saw the finish line. The explosions went off. Boston police pushed everybody off the road. They stopped. They basically put a barrier right up where I was. It all happened so fast. Boston police acted very quickly, and they got everybody off the road. And I essentially hopped the barrier, and I kept running down Boylston Street because between those two bombs and me was my family. And so I needed to get to my family. And one cop grabbed me. He pushed me off to the side, yelled at me. And then I kind of got away from him. And then I ran, and he started screaming at me and at another cop. He grabbed me, almost tackled me. And he secured me, and he was about to arrest me, but obviously had bigger fish to fry. He let me go. I jumped over a barrier. I went into the back alleys. I was running along the back alleys where all the people that were in all the restaurants and the bars that populate Boylston Street, again, that's the road where the marathon finished, they were all spilling out into the alley. And I was running amongst people that were yelling and screaming and crying. There was blood in the, there was trails of blood on the ground where people who had evacuated out of the back were bleeding. And I made it back to the finish line, like backtracking to the finish line, crossed over Boylston Street, made it to my family. I had talked to my dad a little bit earlier and told him to get them out of there because my concern was, I called him. As soon as the bombs went off, I called him because my first concern was that another bomb would go off, and I just wanted to him to get them the hell out of there. I didn't want him to wait around for me. I just wanted him to get them out of there, my wife, my two kids, my sister-in-law. And So on the way, while I was going down Boylston Street, I was the first one down Boylston, like one of the first only civilians down Boylston Street, because I was basically evading the police.
Right.
And the only people on the road at that point were bodies. I don't know if they were alive or dead. I think they were alive. They were either flat down or sitting up. Mm. They were bleeding, and they were being tended to by the only two ambulances that were there that were there to help the runners, not bomb blast victims. And there were Boston police and the Boston Athletic Association's volunteers helping the people that were down. And I ran by them and eventually got to my family and,
wow.
Pissed off.
Wow. Your family, I mean, thank goodness, you clear head, thinking, calling your dad, all of that. But, I mean, your wife must have, because they could have been right there, right where all that happened. And luckily, with that call and with moving around and whatnot, what did they say that was like for them? That would be terrible.
Well, my seven-year-old said that was a lot of fun until the bombs went off.
Oh. Yeah, wow.
Well, how do you explain that to a seven-year-old?
Yeah, how do you explain that? I mean, in your head, that's never a thought in your head, Robert. Never a thought in your head when you're running this storied marathon, is it, obviously?
You know, I mean, unfortunately, in my mind, I think of all that stuff all the time. You know, I know too much.
Yeah.
But that wasn't my thoughts as I was running down Boylston Street because, you know, I had just run a four-hour marathon. It was a personal best. It was a good time for me. And the finish line was in my sights, and bang, bang, you know, like, that was not what I was expecting.
Yeah, as a security, you know, as you said, you have those kinds of thoughts because you're the security man. And after all that was done, in other words, you're reunited with your family, all that kind of stuff, were you thinking in your head, geez, what happened here? Were you trying to assess how maybe somebody got in, or you just said, nah, you're just worried about your family?
No, yeah. My wife had carried my four-year-old for probably a good, I don't know, maybe quarter mile, and then my sister-in-law had carried her for such a distance, and I could see that they were exhausted from carrying her. I mean, she's four, you know, like a four-year-old's what, like 40 pounds, 50
yeah.
pounds?
Yeah.
And so I grabbed her, and because we had to get out of there. I could smell smoke. Like, I had been running the marathon all day, so I was smelling, like, people were smoking ribs, they were cooking burgers and dogs along the course, and so I was smelling, like, great smells of smoke all day, but the smell of a bomb going off does not smell good. And I smelled that, and my dad was thinking about sticking around to get in his car out of the parking garage, and I was like, you are coming with us, we are going home, we are getting out of the city, this place is going to be gridlock in less than 10 minutes. And fortunately, the way I parked my car, it was on the edge of the city, and we got out of there pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Robert, I know it's been a very trying, obviously, day, as I said at the top, and our thoughts are with you and your family, and thank goodness you're safe, and they're safe as well. And thank you for joining us on America Tonight.
Thank you, Dale.
All right, so Robert, who's been on the show many, many times, not expecting to go and run the marathon, as he said, he was excited about his time. He had done this race so often in his life and had really had things working for this charity where a lot of people were chipping in money for his race and whatever his finish time was and whatnot. So the 117th Boston Marathon, the running of it, will be forever known now as probably what will be go down either a domestic or a foreign terrorist act. At 9 o'clock in the morning, you've got the race people getting excited. You have all the people lining up. You have the moment of silence, ironically, for the victims of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. And then eventually, you know, 9:32, the women are off. 10 o'clock, the men are off. And they begin the race, and then this is the elite runners. And then just after 10 o'clock and right before 11, you have the remainder of the field, which is about 24,000 people, because you have to qualify for the Boston Marathon. So all the elite runners had been in well ahead of everybody else. But when you had thousands coming down Boylston Street, as he was describing, toward the finish line, and this was about 2:50 in the afternoon, East Coast time, those explosions erupt, and about a block apart, as I mentioned before, within 8 seconds of each other. So then you have this pandemonium and this crush, this chaos of figuring out what's happening and people bleeding on the streets. So you have race volunteers, the few handful of emergency workers trying to do whatever they can and setting up any kind of a makeshift trauma clinic, and that's exactly what they did to try to help the people as soon as they could help them. But the images coming out of there were just unbelievable. I mean, just unbelievable. Legs severed off, described to me by one friend, is that there were limbs in the street. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that people were seeing as they were coming around a corner and could see the smoke and whatnot. And you know, there was a third blast near the JFK Library in Dorchester, Massachusetts, about 5 miles to the south of Copley Square, but there was no injuries there. And so, naturally, you had increased security all over the place. And now it's a question of who did this, what can they find out, and what we'll know in the next couple of days. But let's hope that those people that are in the hospital fighting for their lives, let's hope that they can save the lives of those that are critical and also those that are in serious condition, because you have people at all different stages of where they were and what happened when the bombs that were inside trash cans went off. And you wonder, trash cans, usually at these marathons, they don't have those trash cans. For the most part, they're pushed further back. So there were trash cans there, and this is where the bomb supposedly came from, inside the trash cans. If you want to throw in your 2 cents, 855-266-8, 855-266-5283.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free. Contains all natural and certified organic ingredients. Contains no preservatives or animal products. Supports a healthy digestive and immune system. Supports weight loss. Improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses 3 groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraganiX.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind a marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp you FeedingUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American-owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Springtime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's spring specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fam and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
Down the street with the people all over. Ain't no sound but the sound of his feet. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip. To the sound of the beat, yeah. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. As promised, you know, it's a new year. You notice if you drive by the gyms, more people seem to be working out because the parking lot is full. You look around and people are all telling you how they're on different diets, and there's a zillion different diets. The one thing that so many people do, and I am guilty of doing this as well, is thinking, I cannot eat carbs. I can't eat carbs, and I'm craving it. Oh, if I could just have some potato, if I could have some rice, wouldn't it be great? But that, no, I can't eat that. Well, let's dispel that myth with the New York Times bestselling author, Dr. John McDougall. Love this guy. He's the author of The Starch Solution. We talked to him a while ago and had a great conversation about these very things. And a lot of you sent me emails saying, you mean I can eat carbs? I was trying to starve myself away from carbs. Dr. McDougall, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Well, thank you. It's sort of unnatural, like trying to not breathe or trying to be thirsty and enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, the idea, like you said, you're suffering with by depriving yourself of carbohydrates. You ought to stop and think, is there something wrong here? I mean, if I want to breathe and want to drink water to satisfy thirsty and I want to eat carbohydrates to satisfy my palate and hunger drive, I mean, where's the disconnect? Did our creator make this horrible, horrible mistake? The mistake is that the meat and dairy industry won. You know, basically after the revolutions that took place in the 70s and 80s, and I'm talking about the U.S. U.S. dietary guidelines that were published in 1977 in the Surgeon General's report in 1982, telling Americans they ought to just cut the dairy, cut the meat, increase the fiber, they said, the carbohydrate, the rice, corn, potatoes, green and yellow vegetables, and fruits. They came out with these very strong, strong statements, and the meat and dairy industry didn't take it lightly. They fought back. They convinced people that their products were really, really good. They got some of their spin doctors to talk about how carbohydrates are bad, and here we have a population of growing obesity, starving people who want to eat carbohydrates, and you know, it's a terrible mess, and I don't see any solution but to get people to stop and look around, and what you see is that all large populations of people throughout all of verifiable human history have lived on starch-based diets, like the Asians who live on rice. Everybody's thin. Heart disease once was unknown. Multiple sclerosis was unknown. I mean, these are hearty, trim, healthy people living mostly on rice, and we can get to the white rice issue if you want in a minute. You look at the Mayans and the Aztecs. Those are known as the people of the corn. The Incas lived on potatoes. The Middle East used to be known as the breadbasket of the world. I mean, it's only when people gave up their source of calories as starch, rice, corn, potatoes, and beans, and instead replace those calories with fat, saturated fat, i.e. meat and dairy and vegetable oils, that we ended up with such serious health problems that, by the way, are unsolvable by exercise. You can't burn off those extra calories.
Yeah, oh, that's so true. I was giving the example before you came on of people I know that just kill themselves working out, and they don't seem to lose very much. Maybe 10 pounds, a little bit, but they won't need to lose much more, and they're killing themselves, pounding it out. And then others who are doing exactly what you say, Doc, by the way, and they're losing weight. They're dropping 30 pounds, 40 pounds, whatever it is.
Well, they're becoming normal size human beings.
Yeah.
There is a diet for people, and that diet has always been starch, continues to be starch. You can't beat the system. It's been around for, you know, maybe 4 million years. You're just plain and simple not going to beat it. And, you know, it's not just the fat. The people around us, they're oily. They've got greasy skin, greasy hair. They've got blackheads and whiteheads and pimples. They have a grayish complexion due to the poor circulation caused by the fats and oils. They don't feel good. They don't look good. They're constipated. They have indigestion. People are plain and simple sick. Let me give you an analogy. It'd be like taking your kitty cat. And by the way, my cat Einstein is sitting right next to me on the couch. Let's just say I took Einstein, my kitty cat, and I decided that I wanted him to eat potatoes. I'd throw a baked potato in front of Einstein, and he wouldn't know what to do with it. He'd just bat it around, and he would look at me with no knowledge of what to do with this potato. And let's just say I got real rough with Einstein, and I took a nasogastric tube, and I stuck it into his stomach, and I force-fed him potatoes for, say, a week or two. What do you think my cat would look like or feel like? And let's decide I decided to solve his problems in conventional ways. Say I decided to take Einstein for a walk. So I walked him around the block a couple times, brought him back, and what do you think he would look like? He'd be sick on this all-potato diet. Say I decided to give him psychological comfort, and I scratched his ears and I petted him. What do you think would happen? He'd remain sick until I took him off the wrong food, i.e. potatoes in this case, and put them back on the meat which a carnivore needs to eat. It's the same thing with people. Your listening audience is sick. They have no way of solving their problems. There aren't enough pills to fix the troubles. And the only way they're going to fix it is by fixing the problem. It's the food. You are a starch eater, a starchivore. Your diet is based on rice, corn, potatoes, green and yellow vegetables. You have to minimize the rich foods or you're going to stay fat and sick. Now, some of your listeners don't care. I realize that. But a lot of people out there with good lives, good spouses, kids, you know, really get a kick out of life, enjoy running and swimming and just having fun and looking good, they want to know this.
Yeah, they want to know the truth. Tell us about, because this happens when you go into a lot of restaurants, especially Thai restaurants, Chinese restaurants.
Okay.
Do you want, think of people go to P.F. Chang's, do you want white or brown rice? And what is the answer to that?
Well, brown would be best, and I get a lot of criticism for this, by the way, because I don't take a real strong stand on white rice. Definitely browned is better. I was a doctor in Hawaii for many years, 15 years, actually, and my population was largely Asian and Filipino, and people would come to me, and they'd say, they want my dietary advice, and I'd say, well, you got to eat brown rice. They'd say, hey, doc, I am not eating brown rice. It's a social issue. Peasants, poor people eat brown rice. I'm only going to eat white rice like refined people. And it was a battle I decided to either win or lose right there. And my answer was, okay, just eat the white rice. I mean, there are 1.73 billion Asians that are trim, avoid heart disease, prostate cancer, breast cancer, live on white rice. So we will make that a deal breaker. So I decided a long time not to fight right there, even though clearly I want to tell you whole grain is better.
Yeah, yeah, I like the brown rice too. Once you try it a few times, I think you can. I do. I think you can really, really get into it and get used to it. You know, some people that are listening to this say, "Well, that's just crazy. Doesn't that turn into fat?" What is the confusion over that?
That is the confusion, and it's based on folklore. It has nothing to do with science. I challenge anybody to go to the National Library of Medicine or even just on Google and just search the relationship between carbohydrates and turning those carbohydrates into body fat. It plain and simple doesn't do under normal circumstances. The body will not convert carbohydrate like rice, corn, potatoes, or even white sugar into fat without great effort, and it only does it in small amounts when it does do it. It's a process called de novo lipogenesis. In other words, the new production of fat, de novo lipogenesis, production of fat. The body just plain and simple doesn't do that. Now, cows and pigs do it well. Human beings do not do it well. We burn most excess carbohydrates, even sugar, even white sugar. We burn the excess off as heat and non-athletic movements. This is science. People who say differently are living in a fantasy world. They do not read the science. They don't understand the science. That's why you can look to Asia and see 1.73 billion people living on, you know, white rice, and nobody's fat. No one is fat.
Yeah, boy, that's true. So here's the other thing. A lot of people talk about eating fish. Is fish really super, super good for you, and you should try to get that in your diet?
No, it's not super, super good for you. It's a muscle of an animal. In this case, that muscle wiggles a tail. It's like the muscles that flap wings called birds or chicken. And it's like the muscles that move limbs called pigs or cows. These are muscles. If you switch one muscle, in other words, cow and pig, for another muscle, chicken and fish, you get no improvement in your health. Your cholesterol stays the same. You remain constipated. You continue to have all the same health problems because you made no change at all. All these muscle foods are rich foods. At best, they should be on your Thanksgiving table or your Christmas table. If you're going to feast, in other words, have Thanksgiving and Christmas, every lunch and dinner, you're going to look like the royalty and aristocrats of the past who have feasted for every meal. I mean, it's a very simple message, and we get deluded into thinking that switching to fish muscle is good for you. Now, it's not healthy, number one. And number two, since I was a little boy, back in the 1950s, 90% of the fish populations have been wiped out. They're gone. Our oceans are depleted. So if you still believe you need to eat fish, you better hurry up and get it because there's only 10% left. And when they're gone, and it's you know, you can imagine the devastation. It's not health food. The fish are in danger. We have to get the truth out there. It's a really sad situation, environmentally and health-wise.
Yeah, boy, I agree with that for sure. I hope a lot of people pay attention to this interview, Dr. John McDougall. If people want to pick up your book, they can get it. That's in the stores, right? So Amazon, B&N.
It's in the stores, all the stores. It's on Amazon, of course. It's called The Starch Solution. It's the best I can do for you after 44 years of trying to help people understand the importance of a good diet. Thank you. I really hope you enjoy it.
I hope people are paying attention, Dr. McDougall. Thanks so much.
I've got a great website also, you know, that if people want to look into it, basically everything's free on it. It's drmcdougall.com. And you'll find 500 recipes, instructions to the program. It's really simple. It's drmcdougall.com.
All right, well, check that out. Recipes are a good thing. Then you have no excuse. You know what to do with the food. Thanks, Dr. McDougall.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Pleasure was mine. It was interesting. Rice, potatoes, all that kind of stuff. The starch solution. On the flip side, we're talking about the fact that nobody gets into the Hall of Fame. What?
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill, and I had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, poor vision, and I really wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess, pretty much.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract, and from within a few days, I started sleeping a lot better. My blood pressure normalized, my blood sugar normalized, and my sleep really did improve.
Experience these benefits and more when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
And folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Ouch! My back is out again!
Hi, Dr. Ortman with Wellspring Spinal Care. If you're experiencing neck, mid, or lower back pain, this information is for you. One of the complaints that I hear is patients receive their typical adjustment, only having to repeat them as the pain returns. Putting the bones back in place is only half of the battle. At Wellspring Spinal Care, we have the entire solution. We use the NUCA approach, utilizing three-dimensional x-rays and gentle touch technology to deliver specific correction. We then design a custom nutritional supplement program which provides essential nutrients targeting the areas of concern. With a NUCA approach and proper nutrition, you'll be on your way to a faster and more permanent recovery. To get you on the road to wellness, visit drortman.com. That's drortman.com. Or call us today, 952-303-9124. That's 952-303-9124. Wellspring Spinal Care, chiropractic done right.
Got a simple question for you. Can you sell? Yes? Okay. Can you sell the intangible? If yes, and you'd like to work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, with no overtime, no weekends, if you're passionate about not closing sales, but about opening relationships, if you truly have a desire to serve global clients who need your advertising expertise, and you're local to the Twin Cities and Burnsville, are hardworking, self-driven, with experience in sales, marketing, or advertising, are personable and a whiz on the phone, GCN wants to talk with you right now. GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, is one of the largest independent talk radio networks in the world, and we're hiring right now. We offer benefits and an excellent commission structure. Experience preferred, but we'll train the right person. Is that you? Submit your resume today to advertise at GCNlive.com. Again, that's advertise at GCNlive.com. Come work with the Genesis Communications Network, an equal opportunity employer.
Sugar Boy called me last night. He said his girl called him. She said, can I come over? She said, yeah.
America Tonight. You know, growing up outside of Philly, I often would wonder what Ben Franklin would think if he was looking at Philadelphia these days compared to what it was. In fact, I thought about it so much that Ben Franklin, or the impersonator of Ben Franklin, was actually invited to my wedding, and it was pretty interesting. He became the main character. Nobody cared about the bride after Ben showed up. So I'm really excited about our next guest. He's a funny man. He was a former writer for Jay Leno's Tonight Show. He also wrote speeches for George H.W. Bush, a former editor for Time Life Books. It goes on and on. If I did his resume, it would take our whole show up. But here's the key thing. He gets that idea of what would the founding fathers think. In fact, that's the deal. That's his book. It's about that. It's about the founding fathers, what Jefferson, Franklin, and Abigail Adams saw in modern D.C. So welcoming you from our virtual green room. We spared no expense. The cheap Red Bulls were in the background. Just kind of think about that for a second. Ed Mosher is with us. Hey, Ed, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, great to be with you. Actually, the book starts off with Ben Franklin's grave and where a mad scientist and his cohorts, they dig into his grave late at night when they're unseen, and they take away samples from inside his coffin. And being the mad scientist is a geneticist, and he decides to clone Ben Franklin and the other two, bring them back to life here in modern America.
And, you know, Ben Franklin's grave, what a great idea. It's such a highlight when you go to Philly. People are throwing pennies all over the grave. I was just there like 6 months ago, and some kid said to me, yo, why are people throwing pennies on Ben's grave? And I'm never heard penny earned, penny saved. So what a way to start that. And what does Ben encounter? Give us a few little nuggets, a few stories about Ben.
Well, I know that you do a lot of sports on your show, and actually the founders, when they're restored to full adulthood and with through a memory gene, their full adult memories, they wind up in Washington, D.C., and they decide to take part in the triathlon. And Ben Franklin, who was a great swimmer in his day, actually, he won a bunch of races in the Schuylkill and the Charles River and even in the Thames in London, and he actually, in real life, he invented swim fins. So he takes the swimming portion of the triathlon on. And he's a very clever man, and he draws upon that famous instrument of his from back in the day, his kite, that he uses to discover electricity. And in the middle of the swim race, he reaches from his wetsuit, which he's created with a 3D printer in modern times, of course, and he pulls out his kite, and he unfurls it in the wind, and it hoists him up, and he sails along the River Potomac, easily beating the rest of the swimmers in the race, getting to Thomas Jefferson, where he gives the timing chip to Jefferson, who takes off on a bicycle.
I love it. And as you said, this biotech firm bringing some of these figures back to life in contemporary Washington, D.C., and one of them is, and you just mentioned it, Tom Jefferson. And good old Tom, was he stuffy or is he a different kind of guy in modern times?
Well, in modern times, he's kind of like the way he was when he was living his life. He's a bit of a contradiction. He's a very aristocratic, a cavalier, highly well-educated, but also very competitive and very liberty-loving. He actually, and he's a very clever man, like Franklin, he's a Renaissance man. And when he gets on the bicycle, he also engages in a little bit of smart sportsmanship to win the race. Abigail Adams and Ben Franklin run up to the top of the Washington Monument, where they scout the race course for Jefferson, tell them where his competitors are, and Franklin, being a good meteorologist, sees an approaching storm. And with a radio, he tells Jefferson about the storm approaching, who gets up on his bike without hands, and then he takes this 19th-century-style cape clothing that he wears, and he hoists the cape above his head into like a big sail, and he gets a big advantage from the wind, and he goes way ahead of all the other cyclists, roars past the Jefferson Memorial to win the bike leg of the triathlon.
You got to love that. All right, this is perfect. You talk about this as in the book as one of the adventures, and on this show, as you can imagine, everybody whines constantly about the TSA and the pat-downs and, you know, the three dreaded letters, the TSA. So what madcap thing happened with the TSA?
Well, of course, they're fascinated by the technology of today. And they want to take an airplane ride. So one day they go off to Reagan National Airport to take a flight, but they have to go through this amazing security, which they had no idea about. And the TSA agents rush up to Abigail Adams and start to give her a pat down. And the poor woman from the prim and proper woman from the 19th century is just horrified about that. Jefferson almost gets into a fight when he sees his friend being patted down. She's able to get her way through security because the TSA agent in question notices her New England accent, and he says, he asks her, would you like a pat-down, or would you like to go through an imaging device, an X-ray machine? And she realizes neither choice is very good, and she tells him, that sounds like a Hobson's choice. And the TSA agent is from New England, from Boston. He goes, you mean Butch Hobson, the old Red Sox player? And she thinks fast, and she's wearing a New England Patriots cap. She says, well, I'm a New England Patriot. And so he lets her through security. However, Ben Franklin, he's sort of a suspicious-looking figure. He's got a ponytail, and he's very irreverent. And so the TSA agents decide to give him a full-body scan. And the whole airport gathers around as the machine is turned on, and Ben Franklin is revealed in all his glory, and Abigail Adams shouts out, it is not George Washington, but Ben Franklin, who should be known as the true father of his country.
And there's lots of ways to take that, that's for sure. What made you, and obviously I give a little bit of your background, but you've written a lot of different books, and you're somebody who digs into histories, too. You're not just a funny guy and coming up with a quick line. Also biotech and medical firm kind of stuff. So this is in your wheelhouse. What made you decide to come up with this? I mean, you're a stone's throw away, right? You're living in Virginia. You know about the history thing. Obviously, you lived it. You were writing speeches. And did you think that some of the stuff that's going on is just so ridiculous that it was just primed to throw the founding fathers in the middle of this?
Oh, yeah, all the above. I did work for some of the genomic companies, actually, that the biotech companies up in Maryland. That helped give me the idea. And I've written history books and worked in politics. And sure, all the issues and politics of the day entered into it also. There's one chapter where they go to Capitol Hill at night, and Ben Franklin hacks into the Capitol building through the electronic locks. And they're able to witness a midnight session of Congress where Congress passes you may have heard of this. They passed a health care law about 3,000 pages long without first reading the bill. And the founders are a bit taken aback by this. So they so Franklin hacks into the legislative database, and Jefferson writes out a legislative rider by which Congress has to have the same health care that it imposes on anybody else. And when Congress finds out about this, they rush back into session and overturn their own law, setting it back to the way it was before.
You have to love it. So it's mad scientist, comic-type adventures is what you would bill it as. And how did you pick the characters? Because, boy, you could have really gone through any era. It seems like now the big buzzword in history is Lincoln. Everybody wants to talk about Lincoln and his grave being robbed or some other. He's a ghost. He's a vampire. He's everything right now.
Well, actually, as you probably know, there's a book and a movie out about Abe Lincoln, vampire killer.
Yes.
So I had to put in a chapter where the founders, who again they're enthralled by the technology of the day, they decide to see their first movie, and the movie turns out to be Ben Franklin, the werewolf slayer, kind of a parody of a parody of the Lincoln book and movie.
Right.
And on the cover of the book, a very surprised Abe Lincoln is hanging from a portrait, looking with shock at Ben Franklin looking into his iPhone. So we can get Abe Lincoln into the book as well.
Yeah, you gotta love that. The in putting this together and going through some politics, as you said, you have a diverse background. Is the push? Do you have any desire, any big push to get back into politics of any sort?
Oh, heavens no. I have the best job in the world and the best material in the world for comedy to make fun of it.
Okay.
To actually go through the grind of giving speeches all the time and raising money. No, thank you. I'll stay away.
Yeah, I have a great idea. Here's what I think, and you probably already thought of this. I think this would make a perfect play. Yeah, and if you make it a play, call me. I would love to play Abigail Adams. They'd eat it up in Washington. Are you kidding?
Well,
I love it.
It's funny you mention that because I am making it into a screenplay to try
there
to sell it to Hollywood.
There you
and
go.
And the way to do it first may do to do a play and then a movie out of the play. And so we'll definitely be auditioning for Abigail Adams.
All right, keep me in mind. Terrific. If people want to get the book, they can get anywhere, right? The usual suspects. They can grab it on Amazon and on down the line, I'm sure.
It's right now it's an e-book, so you can get it on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com. And in a few weeks, it'll be out in paperback again.
Excellent. Eddie M., thanks so much for coming on the show. Good luck.
Thanks for the questions. That was great.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.